This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening, for being a part. You can join us anytime, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a phone line, and it is a text line as well. Jazzed as hell to introduce to you our friend John Nichols. You know him locally at the Cap Times, nationally at the Nation. John, we haven't spoke since the contest, and of course, I mean the Jake Paul Mike Tyson. No, I mean the election. Hey, John, welcome back. How you doing?
Great to be with you. You know, sad that we don't have Eric Humpty in the race.
Right. Let's start there since you brought it up. We talked a little bit about it, his concession speech where he still laments apparently the way Milwaukee counts their ballots by law. And ends up having the results posted, you know, early morning after the election. And of course, his big concern about the third parties that have sucked some votes away from him. What was your sense of the Hovde campaign, John?
Well, look, I mean, in fairness to Eric Hovde, he ran a strong campaign. I mean, he finished very, very close. This is the second U.S. Senate race in 2 years where we've come down to a handful of votes separating the winner and the loser. I think Mandela Barnes did a little bit better, but Eric Hovde was very competitive here. And he probably has a political career going forward if he wants to. If he wants to run for governor, as many people suggest, or again for the Senate, maybe for Ron Johnson's seat in 4 years. I mean, he's built up a lot of name recognition, but you do know why. You know, I think actually he could have played this out even longer and gone to a point where, you know, he waited till the canvas of all the votes was in and then looked at you know, whether to do a recount or something like that. But I think what you saw today was a decision on Eric Hovde's part to, you know, kind of strengthen his claim on future races, right? He ultimately didn't deny the result. He didn't, you know, drag the thing out for, you know, into December, so you have Christmas Eve recount.
Well, he didn't deny the count, John, but he was certainly lamenting the integrity. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know. And I think that wiser heads prevailed. So he's out of the running. Tammy Baldwin is back in the Senate. After a very, very close race. But this highlights, which is an interesting thing, is that it takes time to count ballots. And I know that appears to drive, you know, Donald Trump and maybe Eric Hovde crazy. They just it really bothers them. But what is your alternative? Do you really want, you know, kind of people to just rush it through on election night, even if it's not accurate? Or do you want them to get it right?
Right?
And that's what happened in Milwaukee, is they actually set out to get it right. And, you know, in the scheme of things, the weird reality is that the long count almost always ends up benefiting Democrats, not because it's unfair or not because it's, you know, fraudulent or anything like that. It's because it takes a longer time to count lots of votes than it does a handful of votes, right? And so where does the long count in the United States tend to play out? Big cities and states with huge populations. So they're still counting votes in California.
Right.
I don't happen to think that's a good, you know, at a certain point, you know, I think you really should get it done. And I wonder about the California system. I do think it takes an awful long time. But with that said, should Eric Hovde decide to run for office in California, he will experience a very long count.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is John Nichols, our friend from The Nation and from the Cap Times. John, it was kind of a shock for lots of folks on our side. You know, I wasn't as surprised perhaps as many, kind of like the last time. I'm kind of a jaded old guy now, John. A lot of hand wringing and Monday morning quarterbacking. What was your biggest takeaway? I noticed a lot of folks, including you, John, talking about the time spent with Liz Cheney. You know, I thought it was great to get some of the never Trumpers on board, but, you know, bring them up on stage, have them sing a song, and then, you know, leave them in the city and continue on your tour versus, you know, starting a new band. They were prevalent. What was your sense on the return on that investment, John?
Yeah, let's play out your analogy, okay?
Okay.
They had a chance to get Jimmy Page come up and play with them on guitar. And they decided to go with your little brother. You know, I mean, it with all due respect, there were so many places. I don't begrudge Liz Cheney. She did do something courageous. She stood up to Trump.
Yeah.
And give her due. And same with Adam Kinzinger. Same with a bunch of these other folks. But you notice that Adam Kinzinger, I think he endorsed Harris, but then, you know, that was that, right? You headed on to other things. With Cheney, it became this big production, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they went to Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin with her. They went to Wisconsin twice. They went to Ripon and to Waukesha County. They did all this stuff with Cheney. And those were days taken away from a 107-day campaign, not a very long campaign. You don't have a lot of time. You certainly don't have room to make mistakes.
Right.
And so days were spent with Liz Cheney, you know, trying to win over some Republican, and they weren't spent at the UAW hall in Kohler, or in Sheboygan, I apologize, or the former UAW strongholds in Janesville and Kenosha and Racine. Could you have gone with Sean Fain? Or somebody else, maybe Bernie Sanders, to one of those towns? Would that have helped more? In my opinion, unquestionably, yes. A tour with Bernie Sanders of Wisconsin college campuses, would that have helped more than appearing with Liz Cheney? I say yes. And the interesting thing is that when all was said and done, I think Trump's vote went up in Ripon, right? He actually did better in Ripon this time around than he did last time. So the trip to Ripon, not a big success. And then you got Waukesha County. Now, in fairness, in Waukesha County, the Trump vote held. He got 59% in 2020. He got 59% this year, right? And some people say, well, you see, that's a success because things went worse other places, right? Things didn't get worse in Waukesha County.
Yeah, right.
But the whole point of going to Waukesha County was to make things better.
Right, to produce more out of Waukesha, to balance out what you're going to lose somewhere else.
Exactly. And so, you know, they knew they had challenges in, you know, some rural areas and in some smaller cities. So if you're going to, you know, gamble it all in Waukesha County, you don't gamble it to hold your own, right?
Yeah.
It's like, You go there to increase the percentage. And the facts on the ground are that they just didn't get the boost that they were looking for. Now, do you beat somebody up for that? Well, you know, not horribly. I'm sure, you know, mistakes are always made. Campaigns are busy, busy times and stuff like that. But I would say that if you're going forward and you want to learn lessons about politics, here's a good lesson. A woman that just got voted out of Congress by like a 75-25 margin, you know, in a very Republican state, may not be the best vehicle to win Republican votes.
Mm. Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salve Show. That's our friend John Nichols from the Cap Times and from the Nation. John, I saw some social media postings on the actual popular vote. I guess, you know, given my angst on the election after the result, it seemed like much more of an ass whipping than it actually was. My rough math says that Harris lost by about 2.6 million on the popular vote, which was less than about 7 million that Trump lost by in 2020. Why does it seem like this is much more of a beatdown than it actually was?
Well, this is it, right? On election night. And in the days after the election, like, it wasn't just Fox News. Fox News was saying it was a landslide for Trump. And but Associated Press was also referring to it as some kind of decisive victory, you know, big victory. At the end of the day, this is where it ends up. There's still votes being counted in California, so it's got to be sorted out a little bit.
Right, right.
But Trump has fallen below 50%. So the majority of Americans who cast ballots didn't cast ballots for Donald Trump. That in itself is, you know, makes it hard to claim a powerful mandate.
Mm-hmm.
But also the margin between Trump and Harris, which on election night was something like, you know, in the range of 3 points, maybe even a little bit more. You know, you got a little bit of a margin there, and Trump is well above 50%, all this stuff like that. He's not above 50% anymore, and she has gone up significantly. So now the percentage margin is about 1.7%. And you say, well, that's still a win. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a smaller win than in the overwhelming majority of presidential races in the history of the United States. Way smaller. And I will note, it's way smaller than Biden's win in 2020, which, by the way, Trump denied.
Right? Let's not forget.
And still does.
It said that's not credible, right? Exactly. It's way smaller than Obama's win. It's smaller than, you know, when you run through the list, it just goes on and on and on. There are very few presidents who have won as narrowly as Trump. Now, that doesn't mean he didn't get elected. And you don't deny that. But what you should recognize is that if this guy doesn't have the votes of a majority of Americans, most Americans did not want him to be president, and he didn't win by a substantial margin, then maybe when he says, let me do any crazy thing that comes into my head because it's the will of the American people, Democrats and perhaps even a few sensible Republicans might push back and say, actually, that's not the case.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salve Show. That is John Nichols from the Cap Times and from the Nation magazine. He's going to come back with us for one more segment. John, appreciate your time today. When we come back, I want to talk about the DNC. Apparently, you know, elections have consequences and can't keep the party running on and on. Now, apparently, a bunch of staff members getting laid off. They made that DNC got so much money this cycle, and they're just kicking folks out. I want to talk about that. Plus, also, John,
I want to talk about that too.
Also, John, you know, you're the journalist, the opinion maker here. I want to get your thoughts on the Morning Joe. They started out their broadcast today, telling us they went down to Mar-a-Lago, the enemy of the people, dining with the fascists. We'll come back with John Nichols right after this, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
And welcome back to the Dom Salve Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. John Nichols from the Nation, from the Cap Times, sticking around for one more segment. Thank you for doing so, John. And you can find him on Twitter, the X, as they call it now. You can find him, his handle, I guess we'll call it, at Nichols Uprising. I follow you, John. And that's where I saw this doozy today, a betrayal of party values, DNC staff union statement on staff layoffs. John, it sounds like people are getting let go left and right over at the DNC. It's kind of tough to read, given how much money they made this. And it also kind of like accentuates the point that maybe there's some, I don't know, some misguided thought processes going off at the DNC. John, what can you tell us about the staff layoffs over there?
Well, that's a polite way to say it. First off, I want to note, listening to your bumper music, not that this is exactly apropos, I understand the distinctions between bands and stuff like that, but I think it's important to note that Iron Maiden has a bigger plane than Trump.
The 6'6". And actually, Bruce Dickinson? Bruce
flies it, yeah.
Flies it, yeah. He has his pilot's license. He flies it, yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, just as you're, because I, you know, I'm going to recommend it, future bumper music, because you seem to be.
Oh, we got some Maiden.
Oh, we got some Iron Maiden, but we
got always got Maiden on standby, John.
As I heard the, you know, I feel like you're going toward a metal sound, you might want to honor it.
All right.
With that said, yeah, to the DNC, you know, really, talk about ungrateful.
Come on.
I mean, really, come on. It's like you pour your heart and soul into this campaign, and they don't make it easy for you, right?
No.
They run Joe Biden for most of the year, and then they pull him out, and they say, okay, now you got 107 days to elect a new candidate, right?
Right!
And they're like, okay, we're going to do it. You know, we're ready. They work and work and work and work and work. And I have had plenty of criticism of the DNC, but I think that staffers actually, you know, put their heart and soul into it.
Yeah.
And then they end up losing, and that's a bummer, and everybody's talking about, well, we've got to, you know, pick ourselves up and go forward. Except you. You're not coming with us.
No.
And it's just a depressing, awful. I mean, if you could think of a worse headline,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, DNC begins layout. First, because, you know, ideally, the Democratic Party is supposed to be a party of unions, working class, and
mm-hmm.
it might take better care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's this thing, they're even apparently doing it without severance.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's horrible. And it's a reminder, quite frankly, that the Democratic National Committee really needs new leadership. You know, there's a whole bunch of reasons that have to do with losing.
Sure.
But there is, beyond it, just a kind of a lack of understanding of optics, right?
You know, right.
And a couple of weeks after the election, laying off a bunch of folks and not doing it with transparency and apparently not with severance looks awful. And that is why I tweeted about it or tweeted it.
Yeah, it seems
awful.
Very reflective of how the campaign ended up going. John, what's your sense on the different, on the results? I've seen some lamenting and some articles talking about, you know, working class versus, you know, middle class and that. Versus, you know, the demographics of different different groups. Do you think, as we look back now and, you know, a couple weeks in, that the Democrats, that they missed the working class, quote unquote?
Yep, I do.
Yeah.
Not entirely. There's plenty of working class voters that voted Democratic. In fact, among union members, because unions do internal education, it looks like they held their numbers, right? They did pretty well. But among the unorganized working class, folks who aren't in unions, they really collapse.
Mm.
So somehow the messaging wasn't there. And I think that you just have to accept that that happened.
Yeah.
You can't deny it. If you do, it's absurd. And I don't, for me, it's not hindsight. I wrote a piece 2 weeks before the election saying, you guys got to talk a little more about trade, you know, like free trade and things like that, that people are a little upset by. You know what I mean? They needed to ramp their message up in those areas. They didn't do it, and I think it did hurt them. It's not the only thing that hurt. You know, there's plenty of things you can focus in on. But I do think that there was a real problem there. And frankly, there was a real challenge among young men. Young working class men, it looks like a lot of them crossed over and voted for Trump this time. And they hadn't in the past. And so if the party wants to, you know, kind of look to the future, what they've got to do is start to dissect all that, right? Figure out why that happened, you know, why they lost, you know, a group that's sort of in a demographic they usually had won, and especially among working class voters. If they don't do that, they run the very real risk of trying to cobble together a party of I don't know, Liz Cheney fans, right?
Yeah.
And I just don't think that's going to get him to no. a big majority.
No, I think that's been proven to be the case, given the Liz Cheney tour. John, just a couple minutes left here. Want to throw out your thoughts. The MSNBC crew, Joe and Mika, announced today they went down to Mar-a-Lago and bent the knee or kissed the ring or just had a good conversation with a fascist who calls them the enemy of the state, enemy of the people. John, my reaction initially was, ugh, but I'm looking for some guidance, man. What do you think?
Well, I think your reaction initially was, and then you thought, man, maybe I should get a plane ticket and head down to Mar-a-Lago,
No,
as a radio host.
Oh, man.
As a radio host. No. Look, I mean, this is one of the challenges with Joe and Mika, right? They are the purest distillation of the conventional wisdom in American politics, right? And there's two things about the conventional wisdom. It never has courage, and it's usually wrong. And so they are like, oh, wow, things have shifted, you know, in a way that could affect our contracts. And so we're going to go and find a new way to cover Trump, right? Well, I wouldn't have liked it, frankly, if they, let's say Harris had won and they had flown out to wherever Harris lives, I don't know, San Francisco or wherever, or I guess the vice president's mansion, and you know, wanted to meet with Harris, right, to figure out how they're going to cover her. At some fundamental level, that's just not the way to do this.
Yeah.
I would want Morning Joe, which is a very influential show, to be combative in its coverage of Kamala Harris if she had won, and to be combative in its coverage of Donald Trump if and when he won.
John, I'm going to cut you short there. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank John Nichols from The Nation, from The Cap Times. Go with your instincts, folks. Come back with us, 855-752-4842.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can join anytime. I want to thank our most recent guests today, John Nichols from the Cap Time and from The Nation magazine. And before that, Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Folks, it's your turn now, 855-752-4842. I want to squeeze this one in here while we have time today. Mass deportations would devastate dairy farming and other businesses. Some say the U.S. dairy industry would collapse if not for immigrant workers. Rick Barrett reporting over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Hmm.
Really?
Oh, that's, I mean.
Who would have thought? Who would have had?
Shouldn't someone have said something?
I mean, it seems like we should have had this discussion before we talked about mass deportations. Mm. It seems very important, you know, kind of like beer is to the state of Wisconsin, Hovde.
Beer, cheese,
milk, butter. Come on. Some good reporting here from Rick, but something else lacking that I'll point out as well, at least to my humble opinion, Mr. Barrett, from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If not for his longtime Mexican employees, dairy farmer Hans Breitenmoser Jr. said he would be forced out of the business. His herd of around 400 cows must be milked three times a day, 365 days a year. Oh, my God. Now, the farm, the dairy farm, my neighbor's dairy farm that I grew up on, that I worked on my senior year in high school. I got up at 5 o'clock every morning my senior year in high school and went down to the farm and milked the cows every single day. Hardest ever worked in my life, folks. Never want to do that again. And that was like 110. This guy's got 400 milking cows. And we did ours twice a day. They're doing these cows three times a day. That's a lot of milking. As the article says, his 10 or so foreign-born employees have proven reliable even as the pipeline for other workers in Lincoln County dried up long ago. Many other businesses probably feel the same way. Yeah, it's tough work. More than 30 million immigrants were in the U.S. workforce as of 2022, accounting for 18% of all U.S. workers. Lawful immigrants made up the majority of the immigrant workforce at 22.2 million, according to Pew Research. It doesn't matter if these people are from Mexico or Mars. It doesn't matter because we need X number of people to run the economy. And if they're not here, it doesn't work, Brighton Moser said. Yet President-elect Donald Trump's pledge to deport unauthorized immigrants could trigger a labor crisis at a time when businesses are struggling to find hired help. The threat of large-scale deportations was a cornerstone of Trump's election campaign as part of his promise to secure the U.S. southern border. Much is still unknown about how the plan would be implemented, and many doubt whether it's realistic, but workplace raids are certainly a possibility. I would be surprised if employers didn't already have a playbook for what to do, said Brian Jacobson, chief economist for Annex Wealth Management, a Brookfield-based investment management firm. Well, Brian, if they don't have trouble finding workers now, I imagine they're going to have trouble finding workers then. And the backup plan, Brian, will be to what? Have to increase wages to such a degree in order to attract those folks that would actually do the job. That's going to raise costs, don't you think? I mean, I don't know that
well, they're not going to swallow the price.
There's a plan. There's not. I highly
concepts
doubt.
Concepts of a plan.
I highly doubt, Brian, that people have a plan. I mean, I hope Hans has a plan. But really, I mean, they're just trying to get through the day. They got 400 cows of milk three times a day, plus all the other stuff, man. You got a plan. I mean, if you had a plan, they'd implement that now. You could hire some local works. You know, I was the neighbor kid. You know, I was the 17-year-old coming down to work on the dairy farm. Not many kids like me around doing that work anymore. So, I mean, I think that if there was a plan, it would already be implemented. But I digress. I appreciate your opinion, Mr. Jacobson. By many accounts, immigrants provide most of the labor on large and mid-sized dairy operations. Many of those individuals are working in the U.S. without authorization because, unlike seasonal farm workers, there is no employment visa available to them.
Oh, well, that sounds like a perfectly functioning system.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Yeah. We could do something about that if we wanted to, right? Right. Well. Yet dairies that employ immigrants are responsible for 79% of the milk supply, according to the National Milk Producers Federation. Dairies that employ immigrants are responsible for 79% of the milk supply. The loss of foreign-born workers would upend the industry and nearly double retail milk prices, the Federation says. Consumers would also face higher prices for other grocery items if unauthorized workers were forced out of food processing plants.
Well, yeah, I mean, think of everything that's made with dairy.
Everything made with dairy, the meat processing, vegetables, all the picking in the fields, all those kinds of things. Dairy farming would collapse in a big, nasty, ugly way, Brighton Moser said. Now, his farm has been through tough times, including a fire in 2014 that destroyed his century-old barn. Oh, that sucks. And years of low milk prices that forced thousands of farms out of business. Some farmers say they haven't encountered a U.S.-born applicant in years, and it's crucial they have immigrant employees to fill those jobs. They're good, decent people who are getting work done that otherwise wouldn't get done, Brighton Moser said. For decades, lawmakers have been urged to create a visa suitable for year-round employment on dairy farms, but the efforts have been thwarted by the politics surrounding immigration and the southern border.
Who would have figured?
Yeah, like imagine Trump. It's still a worthy goal, according to the industry. Quote, dairy farmers cannot lose their current workers without massive disruption to their farms and rural economies. Employees who have been working on dairy farms should be able to continue working and earn permanent legal status, as should their immediate families, the National Milk Producers Federation Federation says. The H-2A guest worker visa program used by many in agriculture to attract seasonal foreign labor doesn't fit dairy's year-round needs, but could be improved to make the program worthwhile. Could, should, but it won't. The Trump administration should encourage Congress to pass comprehensive immigration reform, such as the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, a bipartisan bill introduced in the 116th, 117th, and 118th Congress, says the National Farmers Union, a trade group representing farmers' interest in Washington, D.C. Now, General Sutler goes on to talk about manufacturing as well, and very good points. But I want to jump down here just a little bit more from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Expect resistance to deportations. The majority of U.S. registered voters said immigrants, both undocumented and legal, mostly fill jobs that American citizens don't want, as opposed to jobs citizens would like to have, the Pew Research Survey from August revealed. Some also contend that Trump is bluffing about his threats of mass deportations. Well, I do have an update on that. We'll get to that in just a moment. As a presidential candidate in 2016, Trump promised to deport every immigrant living in the U.S. illegally, then estimated to be 11 million people. He failed to do so, earning him a broken promise on PolitiFact's Trumpometer. Deportations were high during the first Trump administration, at times sweeping up people who were never charged or convicted of any crimes, but the number of deportations were less than under President Barack Obama. Let me just say that again for you Trumpsters out there. The number of deportations under the Trump administration was less than under President Barack Obama. Trump also doubled the number of H-2A visas used in hospitality and other industries, said Rebecca Shee, executive director of the American Business Immigration Coalition, based in Chicago. I think he understands intrinsically, because of his businesses, why immigrants are important. Oh, it affects your industry. That now you get it. Okay, I get it. But you farmers out there, you dairy farmers in Wisconsin, does it affect you? Well, certainly it seems like it would, according to your trade industry groups, according to the people interviewed in this article. Still, Wisconsin's immigrant community is worried. Both Immigration and Customs Enforcement, known as ICE, and Customs and Border Protection, known as CBP, are able to make deportation arrests even if local law enforcement doesn't cooperate. And in about 7 Wisconsin counties, including Waukesha, ICE agreements give local law enforcement the authority to detain people or even act as immigration officers. Trump advisors have indicated they could try to expand the use of a process called expedited removal, which would seek to quickly deport people en masse by circumventing the court system. Individuals who have been in Wisconsin for decades, who have raised families here, could be swept up in the raids. The anxiety level is extremely high, Steve Laxton, an immigrant attorney, says. I think one of the things we're seeing is that people who are in lawful immigration processes that haven't been completed are worried. There's more to this. We'll put it in the show notes. You can find at civicmedia.us on the Civic Media app. One thing with the reporting here, and again, if you've listened to the show, you know I've talked a lot about the dairy farmers. You know, I used to work on a farm, and the labor and how much of them. I mean, this is just reinforcing everything that I've already said. But what I didn't see, Rick Barrett, the journalist over at the Milwaukee Journal, what I didn't read in this article is, hey, Hans, who'd you vote for? Hey, Hans, who's your friends and neighbors, you know, your community, the other dairy farms, who'd they vote for? And I have no idea where Hans, one of the guys quoted in here, the farmer with 400 milking cows, milk 3 times daily, where his politics lie. But I would assume, generally speaking, you know, if you're out in the country, you're, you know, statistically speaking, more likely to be a MAGA, more likely to be a Republican, more likely to have voted for Donald Trump. Just like statistically speaking, when those absentee ballots get counted in Milwaukee, those are most likely going to be for the Democrat, in this case, Kamala Harris. So, and I think that's an important part of this conversation, Mr. Rick Barrett, the journalist here at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I think that's important. I think that's a piece that should have its own sub, at least a category. Hey, Hans, you voted for Trump. Why did you do so? Did you not expect that this would happen to your farm? If Trump fulfills his campaign promises that you supported, that you wanted, Are you going? Well, did you just vote for the demise of your own farm? And is that worth it? I mean, there are a lot of other follow-up conversations I think could be had. I think it's important to know where these folks stand. If you voted for Trump and you're a dairy farmer, and you voted for Trump and he's going to all of a sudden start deporting en masse workers, and all of a sudden you don't have those 10 folks working on your farm. Number one, are you as an employer going to be fined at all? Do you bear any responsibility for creating this environment? Hey, people come here to work. Well, if they didn't have the jobs, they wouldn't come here to work, right? If they weren't employed undocumentedly, right? They wouldn't maybe come here. But of course, we need them. We want them. As an employer, Hans wants them. As the workers, they want to be here, of course, or working, paying for their families, maybe sending some money back home to wherever they came from. You know, there's a lot of that going on, money getting shifted back and forth. And we need the labor, certainly. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why we citizens, through our government and self-governance, should very easily be able to address and fix these quote-unquote problems, if you actually want to solve them. But if you're going to be a Trump voter and you're a Wisconsin dairy farmer and you employ migrants or laborers that are here undocumented and they get swept up, what are you going to do? I mean, did you think about that before you voted for the guy? Did you think about how that would impact, you know, your life and your family and your farm and your business? If all of a sudden you got to what? Start paying double for the 17-year-old high school student to come down and maybe do a shift here or there? I mean, good luck. We need the labor. We want the labor. We want hardworking folks working here. We like our milk. We like our dairy. We like our beer. We like our manufacturing. We like our meat. We need these things. We need the labor. So if you're in any of those industries and you voted for MAGA, you're voting for your own demise. New York Times. President-elect Donald J. Trump intends to declare a national emergency over immigration and use the military as part of his plans for mass deportations of undocumented immigrants, according to a post he made Monday on social media. His advisors have sketched out such plans before, but Trump's post explicitly endorses an approach using the broad emergency powers of the president to help fulfill his promise to expel millions of people from the United States. And maybe those 10 of those millions of people will be from Hans's farm. That means the price of your milk is going up. 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Callers, I see you there. Texters, are going to get to you momentarily. But as mentioned, we're talking about this Milwaukee Journal article, mass deportations would devastate dairy farming and other businesses. Yep. Followed up by a New York Times piece here where they talk about, Donald Trump intends to use emergency powers and military for deportations. Here was the specific paragraph. The president-elect's confirmation of his mass deportation plans came in response to a post made earlier this month by Tom Fitton, who runs the conservative group Judicial Watch, wears those very tight shirts. He's buff. He wrote that Mr. Trump's administration would declare a national emergency and will use military assets to address illegal immigration through a mass deportation program. At around 4 a.m., Mr. Trump reposted Mr. Fitton's post with a comment, all caps, true, with 3 exclamation points.
Oh, good. We're back to getting updates on serious policy that is going to affect millions and millions of people from middle of the night social media posts.
You thought we got away from that.
I really was hoping that we were done with that.
Nope. Because doesn't every president-elect get out and tweet and post 4 o'clock in the morning, especially when it comes to deporting millions of people, which will drive up prices for every single product those folks are associated with?
Not to mention being absolutely devastating to the millions of families involved.
Oh, send them, breaking up, they can all go too. Those all go. And don't forget the billions of dollars it will cost and the social upheaval that is sure to come. 855-752-4842. Are you folks, do you wonder? And I don't want to rip on poor Hans here, who was in this article, and maybe he voted for Harris, maybe he didn't, but I think those are things the readers want to know. Andrew points out, will Hans turn in his undocumented migrants to be deported or just his neighbors? Again, we don't know where Hans stands on the list, but certainly he has undocumented employees working for him. I mean, it's known, right? He basically said that. So is that breaking the law? Is anyone going to go raid Hans's place? Is Hans or anyone like Hans going to have to pay a price for their involvement in this racket to suppress wages, let's call it, to keep prices down? And if you folks voted on inflation, you think this is going to help you? Please help me do the math. Help me do the math. How does deporting millions of people, a big percentage of the dairy workforce, is going to lower the price of dairy? I'm waiting. 855-752-4842. We got someone from the 920. Owner of a Dodge County CAFO told Democratic chair his farm would go out of business if workers were deported, but would still vote for Trump. Go figure. Yes, I guess sometimes if we're looking for logic, that's not necessarily going to be found. 855-75-CIVIC. Let's get to it. Dick from Madtown, you're up. Welcome, Dick. What do you got for us?
Well, you know, isn't it interesting, all of this stuff, but the stuff that is went on in the last week of his appointees.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned to your screener, Caliglia came up because he wanted to put a horse in the Senate, and, you know, in Roman times, and this is kind of what's going on. He's getting the worst and just challenging them.
I usually hire the best people, Dick. Speaking of, and throw this one out there, we'll talk about it more tomorrow, Donald Trump tapping another Fox Business co-host. Hey, Wisconsin's own former Rep. Sean Duffy could be the next transportation secretary. Going to follow up Buttigieg with Duffy. That'll be great. Hey, Charles from the MKE, you're next. Hey, Charles, welcome. What do you got for us?
Dom, you're a smart man. You guys have missed a point. Every time he talked about the immigrants are taking the black jobs, that's the first thing that came to my mind.
Mm.
You know, him always saying black jobs. Yeah, he plans to put the black people back out in the fields working, milking the cows and tending the homes.
So, yeah, that's a point, Charles. Maybe that was just part of the motivation to get the black vote. You know, because they're taking the black jobs. I love how Harris said, maybe this is one of those jobs. You know, it's hard to, I'm not going to get in to pretend like Trump is playing any sort of 3 or 5 or 10 dimensional chess. But there are going to be, you know, it's not going to be a puzzle. If folks are taking off those farms, you know, it's going to be tough. Production is going to go down. Prices are going to go up. It's that simple. Tim from Whitewater, you're up. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Well, I grew up on a farm and I have family, and it's you're not entirely right there. Production won't go down. They'll just automate. That's happening anyway, because we've gone from a generation of illegal Mexican-Americans coming up here, Mexicans coming up here to work on the farms. Now, Guatemalans and Nicaraguans, as the Mexicans have moved into higher levels of, or, you know, nicer work in factories and stuff like that. The thing that you're not touching on here is the fact that the reason this happened, whether you like it or not, is that it was the illegal aspect of it. People want a legal process of having immigration and border control. It's as simple as that. It is as
okay, but Tim,
that.
Tim, what about the folks that are I got it. I got it. What about those who are employing them? What about those who are employing them? Do they want it too? I'm asking you, the Trump voters who own the farms or the factories or the meat processing plants that have those employees that voted for Trump, what are they voting for, Tim? Can you help me?
They're voting for legal a legal process of immigration.
Then why are they engaging in illegal employment of those migrants then, Tim?
Well, I've worked in this. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I know, man, because it's the money, baby, Tim. I love you, man. Stay tuned. Stay listening. I want to hear more from you. Tom from Madison, sorry can't get to you today. I want to thank our guest, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Of course, John Nichols, come back tomorrow. It'll be overtime with Maggie Dawn. Stick around. Nightlight with Pete Schwab next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.